Good evening, hope you had a good weekend. You're listening to The Last Leg on WLR. Jordan Norris here with our brand new weekly Monday night sports programme. A lot to cover in the next hour. We'll be reflecting on that incredible All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship final between Cork and Clare yesterday, as well as the beginning of the Waterford Senior Hurling Championship. Ray Scott will join us from Royal Troon to reflect on a brilliant 4 days of golf at the British Open. But first, this week marks the start of the 2024 Olympics in Paris. I've been speaking to a Waterford man who goes to France in medal contention as part of the Irish 4x400m mixed relay team. Thomas Barr and his Ireland teammates will be hoping to add to world bronze and European gold in the coming weeks, and I caught up with the Dunmore man. Now, I'm delighted to say that I am joined on the line by Thomas Barr. The Ferrybank AC man is, of course, the June winner of the WLR Granville Hotel Waterford Sports Awards for his fantastic performances for Team Ireland, which saw him win a European gold medal in the Stadio Olimpico, and he also picked up a 12th national title that month as well. Thomas, it's been a whirlwind few weeks. You had world bronze, European gold, another national title. Fantastic times for yourself, and now the Waterford Sports Award to add on to it. So it's been a good time for you.
Yeah, I'm honoured with the award. Thank you very much. I really, really appreciate it. It's been a busy month, all right, but a very, very successful one. You know, it's something that I'm very grateful for, especially at this part of my career, because I kind of thought my medal winning days might have been beyond me. But I'm lucky to still be a part of such an amazing team in the mix 4x4 at the moment.
Definitely, yeah. And I suppose, as you mentioned, like typically someone like yourself maybe might be heading towards a twilight of the career, but for you, like with the Olympics on the horizon now, Thomas, like the sky is the limit. I imagine it's been a rejuvenating period in your career in a way, like it's given you a fresh enthusiasm.
It absolutely has, yeah. It's given me a whole fresh look, a whole fresh outlook. I mean, the hurdles, I raced all around Europe in the last couple of weeks trying to secure my Olympic standard for the 400-meter hurdles, but it just really didn't go my way, unfortunately. So I missed out on qualification for that, but to still be in the mix for the mixed 4x4 relay is amazing. So yeah, we're kind of at the pointy end of the season now where I'm heading back into a heavy training block now for the next 3 weeks or so as we kind of ramp up for Paris.
What a brilliant team that we're going to be able to bring to Paris. Like, we saw such an amazing period of success at the European Championships as well. So Irish athletics in general is in a really, really good place. Like, we have a real promising generation coming through.
It is. It's amazing to see as well. For as long as I've been involved in the sport, I have never seen so much support from the general public, so much support on social medias, and so much media coverage of the sport. As well as we had record-breaking crowds at national championships there only a couple of weeks ago. So it is amazing to see so much support behind our sport, what would have been, say, typically a minority sport. But it's because, you know, we've seen so much success this summer and even last summer. And that's just, you know, we're happy to welcome everybody on the athletics bandwagon at the moment. And what's great is it'll do wonders for the sport going forward, because there's a huge appetite now for athletics and for the sport. There's, you know, waiting lists for juvenile clubs, which is great to see. So there's a great generation of talent coming through. You know, there's a lot of youngsters coming through, as well as, you know, that appetite at that juvenile sort of level that's there, which hopefully will continue, you know, almost continue on that sort of conveyor belt to bring more and more talent. You know, we'll scout more talent to keep the ball rolling and grow the sport as much as we can.
Definitely, yeah. Take me back to that night in Rome, Thomas. I imagine the feeling once, you know, all four of you had crossed the line and you get a chance to reflect and see what you've actually achieved. Would you say it was one of the best nights of your career so far, if not even the best?
Oh, it is absolutely one of the highlights of my career. I mean, it's funny because going into it, there was expectation on us, because after the World Relays bronze, we finished third to the USA and to the Netherlands. But we knew going into the Europeans that we were a medal favourite. But if we got it absolutely right, there was no reason why we couldn't take the gold. Now, we were fairly, you know, we were fairly certain that we were aiming for silver, but at the same time, you know, we weren't going to sell ourselves short. So, I mean, to actually, when I remember just when I handed over the baton in the cauldron over to Charlene, and we were in really, really good contention. To be honest, my initial thought was, if everything here goes to plan, we have a gold medal coming out of this. And it did. And it was one of those things, it was nearly like a relief that we had pulled it off. But then it was the overwhelming joy, because there's been very, very few occasions in my career where I've taken home a medal and, you know, pulled off the plan. As it was meant to go as such. And that comes with a huge sense of excitement and joy. And it's just, for me then, the excitement that it generated throughout the Irish athletics community, but also the Irish public, was a huge, huge bonus for me. And that's always been a huge bonus for me when it comes to the sport.
Definitely. And when I suppose you factor in the Olympics now, and you're kind of going back to that overall world level, I know you have a world bronze medal under your belt, but as you mentioned, the gold and the worlds went to the US, and you factor in you'll have other teams coming in that wouldn't have taken part in the Europeans. So it creates another higher standard now for Paris in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, it does. The Olympics is the pinnacle. Teams will basically build their seasons, build their four-year plan around the Olympics. So we're under no illusions that just because we have a medal from Europeans and just because we have medals from the World Relay Championships, that it's going to be an easy task to take away an Olympic medal. But we are riding that wave. We are in a position that we've probably never been in, whereby we are going into it with the hunger to challenge for a medal at an Olympic Games, which is, you know, just giving me goosebumps even talking about.
It's an amazing position to be in, for certain. I just want to talk to you as well, Thomas, while you're here, about one of your teammates in particular, and that's Rashida Adeleke. I mean, she's become the face of Irish athletics, I suppose, almost overnight, but it's been an absolutely amazing ascension to that position. And I think she's a fantastic poster person in a way for Irish athletics to have. She embodies everything that you kind of want Irish athletics to be about, don't you?
Absolutely. And on top of her performances and accolades, she's an absolute legend and a sweetheart, and just a very, like, a real genuine person to be around, and you know, good fun within the team. But she's had huge amount of success as a junior, coming through. And often what can happen is that success as a junior doesn't always translate to success as a senior athlete, but her talent has been really well harnessed. And she is a huge, huge talent and a huge asset to our team. You know, she's going into this Olympics with a real medal shot in the individual 400. And we're not sure what her decision is going to be when it comes to the relays. Like, we would be absolutely delighted for her to be part of the relays, because she is our silver bullet in a lot of ways. You know, she's an absolute superstar, and anytime she steps on the track, she lights it up. But at the same time, we absolutely respect whatever she decides to do when it comes to the relays, because she has bigger fish to fry in that she's 21 years old going into an Olympics as a medal favorite in the 400 meters. So that's absolutely going to be her main focus. So I'm really excited I'm delighted to have been on teams with her, you know, at this late stage in my career. And I'm really, really excited to see where she goes. And she's a very, very fitting poster girl for Athletics Ireland at the moment.
Definitely. And just as well, this month that's just gone, it saw you pick up a 12th national title for yourself. It was, another amazing achievement. But, like, I imagine if I'm talking to a young Thomas Barr and I tell you that you win as much as one national title, and then you've been all around the world and picking up European and world medals, and, you know, you've got so many national titles under your belt now, I imagine it's just an amazing thing for a young guy from Waterford to have achieved so much at this point in your career. And you're going off to the Olympics. We had Kate Veal, obviously very unlucky to miss out. Ben Johnson is going to the Olympics, a Waterford man with the hockey team. So from humble beginnings to be where you are, it's an amazing, amazing thing.
Oh, it is. When you roll back through the years and roll back the clock, it's pinch me kind of stuff, really, to be honest, because I remember walking into Morton Stadium for my first ever National Senior Championships, where I was tipped to win it. I was in really good shape that year. And I remember walking into the stadium and they had the 100 meter hurdles final on as I was walking in. And they were announcing over the intercom that Dervla O'Rourke was going for, I think, her 13th national title. And I remember thinking, my God, 13 years, 13 national titles. That is unbelievable. You know, regardless of world or European accolades, 13 times to come away with a gold medal from national championships. That was something that really just, it kind of struck me and blew me away. I was like, wow, that's, that sort of longevity is just, is really incredible. And here I am now, 14 odd years later with 12 national titles. And like you said, having traveled the world with a sport that I started out as a hobby, never really had any dreams or aspirations of making it to an international level at all. And just enjoyed every minute of it. And just rode the wave and got on the train and kept going. And just like, I love a challenge. So I love pushing myself day in, day out at training. Whether it was in the miserable conditions of the Irish weather or if it was in the gym, I always loved just challenging myself, and then tried to execute what I could on the track and look at where it's landed me. And, you know, if there's anything, any bit of advice I can give to the younger generation is I never had any great aspirations. I never had any great belief in myself as an athlete. But I enjoyed the sport and I worked hard and it's taken me to places I never even imagined.
Yeah, I mean, it's just incredible when you get a chance to look back at it all, and hopefully we'll be able to add to the list in the weeks ahead. And just as a final question, Thomas, you've been to Olympic Games in the past and, you know, been so close yet so far. Does disappointment in some respects fuel that ambition to try and put things right in the future?
Absolutely. Anytime I've call it failed, anytime I've failed or anytime I've not met my targets or I've been disappointed, I've learned more about my performance than I have when it's all gone right. And it was just having a willingness to kind of learn from those occasions is really important. And it does. It gave me, I remember coming away from the Tokyo Olympics where I missed out on the semi-final by one spot. And I remember I was disappointed, but it was quickly replaced with, right, I'm not leaving myself in this position again. And then I knuckled down, and the last couple of years of training have gone really well. I've just been unfortunate with little bits of injuries with calf and Achilles issues, but I suppose the fruits of that labour came out in the mixed relay at the Europeans with the fastest relay split I've ever done. So yeah, it really is. It's about using that disappointment as fuel to the fire, and I've definitely managed to do that as best I can.
Definitely. Well, Thomas Barr, I must say, what a fantastic ambassador you are, not just for Waterford, but for Ireland in general. Absolutely fantastic achievements in these past few weeks, and I really hope you add to it in the weeks and months that are ahead. Wish you all the very best. Congratulations on winning the Waterford Sports Awards, and hopefully the next time I'm talking to you, I'll be talking to you as an Olympic medalist. Thanks, Thomas.
Keep the fingers crossed. Thanks a million for having me. I really appreciate the award.
The one and only Thomas Barr there. And of course, Thomas is not the only Waterford representation at the Olympics this year, as we also have Ben Johnson on the Irish hockey team and Lynn McHenry as part of the coaching staff of the Irish boxing team. I also caught up with Ben Johnson earlier in the week on his Olympic ambitions.
To remind people, you're just 23 years old. Obviously, you've been around the Ireland setup for quite some time and your name has been out there, but there's so much ahead of you as well, Ben, that goes beyond this summer too. To be involved at this level and to be playing amongst some of the best players in the world at just 23 years old, I imagine that's something that you just have to pinch yourself for sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes I get a bit ahead of myself and probably are too hard on myself for my age. But listen, it's got me this far, so I'm going to keep doing it. On it, there's LA 2028, which is also on the horizon for a lot of players. World Cups, Sydney 2032, I believe, as well. So listen, that'll all come nicely after August time when I have time to think about it. But for now, I'm thinking of Paris and trying to juggle everything in between. So, but yeah, a lot hopefully to still give in this jersey. So,
Talk to me about your roots in hockey. Coming on to the scene of hockey in Waterford, I suppose it's not really the first sport that a lot of people think of. How did you get involved on a local level and then obviously get to the place where you are today?
100%, yeah. It's not one of those top three or four that you think, and my whole career has been trying to change that. And through my school, Newtown School, and through Waterford Hockey Club, they've been, you know, pivotal to my involvement in these different underage and now senior men's teams. And through all my ups and downs, they've just been there the whole way through. So school and the club have a huge, huge part to play in this massive, massive project. So I can never give back.
Yeah, I think you can see how humble you are and how grateful you are for those experiences that you've had. And obviously we mentioned not looking past Paris. There's a lot of games coming up in the run-up for preparations, and that you're training really hard at the moment. You're a lot going on, but just the end goal and being involved in an Olympics, and like it's going to be such a tough, tough challenge. But I think Irish hockey is well placed to go and to compete, Ben.
The last 4 years, the women have got a lot of attention, and rightly so. They've really brought hockey to the floor in the game in Ireland, and we're hoping to do something similar this year. And just having a rattle at some of these teams that in the past we wouldn't have been considered even amongst them. So it's a privilege to be able to even be here, and I'll do my best to try and get onto this team. But it's going to be special for sure.
Ben Johnson there, Waterford's newest Olympian. Best of luck to everyone representing Ireland in the weeks ahead. Hopefully there'll be plenty of medals to celebrate across the board. Stay with us, because back after these to discuss a thrilling weekend of hurling. Welcome back. You're listening to The Last Leg here on WLR with Jordan Norris. And now we're going to talk all things hurling. What an incredible All-Ireland hurling final that was yesterday. An unbelievable advertisement for everything that is good about the game. I think a replay might have been more desirable for many people, but look, let's reflect nonetheless on what was a historic success for Clare.
4 points from Cork without reply. Clare, having worked hard to level the game, Cork have taken control again, superbly. Robert Downey, Glen Rovers, who did this against Limerick, is heading for the same goalpost. He's made a marvellous run. Oh, what a fantastic goal! Robert Downey from Glen Rovers! Unstoppable!
They ever scored in Croke Park. What a catch over Peter Duggan.
Side, there's an opportunity. Back in the net. Aidan McCarthy. It's the tonic that Clare needed, because they have been playing poorly.
Controlled just about by Mark Rogers. There's acres of Croke Park pitch in front of him. Still Mark Rogers tries to get inside. This is Rogers. Oh my word!
We had an absolute fabulous goal in the first half. Now we have a second. 82,300 people come alive, or wherever you are in the world. Look at Scariff's Mark Rogers. What a score. Ducking inside. He knew exactly what he was going to do, and he hits it past Patrick Collins. Unstoppable.
20 minutes to go in this All-Ireland final. Puck out won by David Fitzgerald. Running again at the Cork defence, laying it off quickly. Tony Kelly, the captain, goes around the bend. Oh, beautiful skill. Kelly!
Incredible! Incredible goal! Tony Kelly, the magician from Ballyhale, the captain of the Banner County, has lifted the hearts of the people of Clare. We have three fantastic goals. Robert Downey, Mark Rogers, but look at Kelly, the stick one. Sheer, utter magic in All-Ireland final day. What a game. What an All-Ireland final. What a thriller in the capital city. And Johnny Murphy has blown the full-time whistle. It's a drawn game. And again, Kelly gets a hurley to him. Lovely wrist work. This man is on fire. What a score, Tony Kelly.
That is unbelievable. The tackling, it's out again. But we come back, that is one of the great scores again. We're saying about him. He's back to his very best today.
Cork have to have it. And Cork have it. Can they get the equaliser? The ball is wide.
It's over, it's over.
And Clare have won the All-Ireland.
This is the greatest day of my life anyway, and speaking for the lads, I can fairly say it's the greatest days of their lives as well. Sometimes you just think over the years you might never get back, and to see this is just incredible.
Our seventh time here, there was a lot of talk about five this year for our neighbours and what a team they've been. For us to get our fifth one, and for Brian to be in charge for me is just an incredible, incredible moment.
We just took it ball by ball, play by play, and we just took it out. Like, we backs to the wall there the first 10 minutes, we were 7 right down. We just kept going, and thankfully got ourselves back into the game, a few scores, and kept going.
The first and only man to win Young Player of the Year and Player of the Year in the same year. He has won one Munster, four club, two Fitzgibbon, and now two All-Ireland titles. A proud son of the Ballyhea Club, Tuggenshee Anne Fleischer, Corn Liam McCarthy and Ish Avrunner, our captain and Clare, TK, Tony Kelly.
And this group of players can only be put together by one man at the very top. In Clare, hurling is like a religion, and Brian Lohan is like our God.
What a game. One of the best All-Ireland finals of all time. One of the greatest games of hurling of all time. And of course, locally, the Waterford Senior Hurling Championship started up this week. On Friday night, Clonay kick-started the championship with a 24-point win over Tallow, 422-17 with 2-8 for Jason Gleeson. And afterwards, manager Tony Shelley spoke to WLR's Tomás McCarthy.
Tony, was that the start you're looking for to the championship?
I suppose the result was the start we were looking for, all right. I suppose there were certain aspects of the game that we probably wouldn't have been happy with, especially in the first half. But I think we changed over in the second half, and I think we kind of played a bit better than, or more the way we wanted to play. Anyway. So, look, good win, but I'd say Roan Moore won't be quaking in their boots or anything like that.
What did you like about the second half performance?
We used the ball a bit better. We closed down their puck house, not that they had too many, to be fair. And we just, our shape looked a lot better, and we just used the ball better, and we got some good scores. But look, it was a work in progress, to be fair.
Did Jason Gleeson just pick up from where he left off last year?
Yeah, to be fair, Jason has been in brilliant form in the league for us, and he's just you know, he's a really good player and works really hard at his game, and you know, we're lucky to have him in there, you know.
You went out in the quarterfinals last year, Tony, narrowly to De La Salle. What ambition does this group have for 2024?
Sure, look, I suppose we'd like to go a step further than we did last year, like, you know, but look, we'll take one step at a time. Tonight was our first game. We just, you know, first games in the championship is kind of just getting back into the rhythm of championship, and hopefully that will stand us in good stead for next Friday night.
How much of a step up will next Friday night be against Roan Moore?
Oh, sure, next Friday night will be a huge step up. Like, Roan Moore are a phenomenal side, like, work really hard, use the ball well. They're a big side too, so look, we're under no illusions of what's facing us in Walsh Park next Friday night, but having said that, we're looking forward to the challenge.
And Lismore also got off to a winning start, as they had 6 points to spare on Dungarvan at Fraher Field on Saturday. Goals from Morris Shanahan, Ben O'Sullivan and Ray Barry saw them win out by 3-18-118, and Tomás spoke to manager Shane Kearney afterward.
Here with Lismore manager Shane Kearney. Shane, what was the key to victory tonight?
Oh, look, I suppose up until the last 5 minutes, it could have been anyone's, and we just got lucky. Really, we knew we were coming down to a battle, because with Ballygunner being the next game for Dungarvan and the next game for us, it is very hard to face into that. So I suppose Dungarvan fancied themselves against us, and we fancied ourselves against them. And we came out the right end of it. But look, it was a very sporting game. They have some very slick hurlers, Dungarvan have. And they always have had, I suppose, to be fair to them.
We noticed midway through the second half, you pushed up Ray Barry on the Dungarvan sweeper to go 5-on-5 at one end and 7-on-7 at the other end. How pleased are you with the way that worked out?
Well, it could have been backfired badly, but we said we'd have a go at it, because the sweeper, the young lad they put back there, was playing really, really well, and we just had to do something. And look, Ray is comfortable in the back sort of forward, so we said we'd risk it. Yeah.
How good was Finn Barini tonight? Got those 2 points and the goal-saving block as well on Patrick Curran.
Look, Finbar is captain, and he's captain for a reason. He's just a leader, on and off the field. One of the quietest men you'll ever meet, but when he crosses the white line, he'll give you 110% every time.
Lismore were in relegation trouble last year, Shane. What's the goal for this group in 2024?
Look, I suppose it's hard to focus when, you know, we've got Ballygunner in 2 weeks and we deliberately haven't spoke about it. All our focus is on Dungarvan. So look, we'll see what happens there. I think everyone knows how good Ballygunner are. So having next weekend off is great. We can recover hopefully a few little injuries and hopefully everyone will be right and we'll worry about Ballygunner Sunday week.
This is your first year in charge. What sort of response have you got from the players so far?
Look, they've been really good. We're very fortunate in the sense there's a lot of young lads after coming through this year. And last year, a few of the younger lads got blooded in senior hurling. So we've been very fortunate. And I'm just hoping we're at the end of the major injuries. Obviously, Cormac and Pádraig were doubts tonight. And Cormac is rehabbing really well. Huge loss to us. You don't replace players like him. But everyone that's been put in has stepped up and done their bit.
Will we see Cormac Daly or Paddy Pendergast in the next couple of weeks?
I don't want to say too much now, but you'll 100% see Pádraig and Cormac. We're just not putting any pressure on him because it was a very bad injury and he's worked so hard, so we're just going to see how it goes.
That was a huge win for Lismore, that considering that Ballygunner are the other team in the group. And I must say, I was at the game and what an unbelievable performance from Lismore's Finbar Rainey. He was everywhere on the pitch and came up with two huge points in the second half. Real captain's performance. And I think anybody that was there can't deny Lismore probably were deserving of the victory. There was also a doubleheader at Welsh Park on Saturday night. Abbey side denied Ferrybank a winning start at senior level as the Western side won out comfortably on a scoreline of 322 to 213. While Austin Gleeson marked his return with a superbly taken first half goal as Mount Syne saw off Passage by 121 to 117. Four games again this weekend. On Friday night at 7:30, it's Roan Moore versus Clonay at Welsh Park. On Saturday evening, there's a doubleheader from 5 o'clock at Fraher Field. 4 Mile Water face Abbey side, followed by Ballygunner looking to build on their never-ending unbeaten run when they do battle with Dungarvan. Then on Sunday, De La Salle open their campaign as they take on Mount Syne at Welsh Park from 6:30. And we'll have updates across all the games here on WLR. And just before we take a break, on the soccer front, a 2-1 win for Waterford FC in the second round of the FAI Cup against Coghill Celtic on Friday. And they're in action against Drogheda United away on Friday in the League of Ireland Premier Division. A game we'll be bringing you live here on WLR thanks to McConnell's Toyota Waterford with Ray Scott and John Frost on commentary. And commiserations, of course, to the Waterford Women's League squad who lost out 1-0 to the Eastern Division in yesterday's All-Ireland final in Arklow. An unreal achievement to get there. And well done to Tommy Butler, the players and everyone involved with their squad. Stay with us because we're back after the break with golf. Golf. Welcome back to part three of this week's The Last Leg on WLR with me, Jordan Norris. And now for the final part of this week's programme, we're going to turn our attentions to golf, where our very own Ray Scott with that royal troon for the 152nd British Open.
Xander Schauffele grabbed this Open by the neck with four birdies coming home, and he eventually closed it out with a 65 for a two-shot victory to become the first man to hold the USPGA and the Open titles at the same time since Rory McIlroy in 2014. Justin Rose birdied the last for 67, with overnight leader Billy Horschel birdieing his final three holes to join him on 7-under. Tristan Lawrence and Russell Henley were behind them. For Shane Lowry, it was a case of redemption today. He gave it his best shot with a good round of 68 that left him 4-under for the tournament, but ultimately it was a bridge too far.
I just wanted to go out and give myself a chance today. I wanted to go out. I promised Neil I'd go out. You know, we had a great chat last night, and I promised Neil I do one thing and I go out and fight for every shot, and that's what I did today. You know, unfortunately it's not good enough and it's very disappointing. You know, there's no two ways about it. I had a great chance of winning this Open and, you know, it's going to hurt for a few days, but onwards and upwards and, you know, on to the Olympics and try and win a medal for Ireland and get on from there then.
Pádraig Harrington was next best of the Irish. A final round of 72 saw him just outside the top 20 on 4 over par. Tom McGibbon was 12 over with Darren Clark 15 over par. Ray Scott at the Open Championship.
I just can't wait to drink out of it.
What's going to be the tipple of choice?
My dad's here with me, so I'm going to let him do the honour, whatever he wants.
What does this championship mean to you, though?
It's it means a lot. It's something all of us play for, and it really is a dream come true to be holding this, and it definitely hasn't sunk in yet. You know, my brain is still grinding on this amazing property here, just trying to get through the holes, so I can't wait to sit back and have a moment with this Claret Jug.
Now I'm joined on the line by Ray Scott. Ray, of course, spent the last 4 days at Royal Troon in Scotland at the 152nd British Open. Ray, to summarise, a unique and very interesting 4 days of golf on a whole.
Yeah, it certainly was, Jordan. It was a tournament that I suppose many people talk about, not sure about Troon, but Troon has proven to be a master venue this week. It was coughed up so much. It was, you know, all the players were practicing from Monday with one wind, and then over Thursday and Friday, the wind started to change, caught out an awful lot of people, particularly on Saturday when the rain came in as well, and none more so than Shane Lowry, of course. But I think we've ended up with a tournament that, you know, going into the final day when you have nine players under par and Shane Lowry within three shots of the lead, it turned out to be a magnificent tournament.
It definitely did, as I suppose you touched on it there, Ray. Somewhat disappointing from an Irish perspective because it started so promisingly for Shane Lowry, and of course it was a nightmare 2 days for Rory McIlroy. But on a whole, Shane Lowry, I thought yesterday, did very well to arrest the stump that he made on Saturday in particular.
Yeah, oh, he certainly did. And, you know, there were six Irish in the field, and you would not have expected Rory McIlroy to be one that missed the cut. But, you know, that's what happened. He did the same in 2019. Actually, ironically, 2019, he missed the cut as well. And Shane Lowry went on to win. So we all thought that perhaps there was a sign there after Lowry's opening two rounds. But, you know, you have to look at Saturday. It was horrendous conditions out there. You know, it was very, very difficult. The players, you know, to a tee, everybody came in. You know, there was 100 yards in certain cases between tee shots on Friday and Saturday. So that really had an impact. You know, when you saw Shane Lowry going into a bunker short of a par 3 and 17 with a driver, you knew that those conditions were extremely difficult. But to his credit, he bounced back yesterday. He did a lot of work to try and haul himself into contention. He was within one shot of the lead at one stage. And I think he certainly redeemed himself with his performance, just perhaps just a bridge too far. And I think that performance was overshadowed a little bit by the performance of Xander Schauffele. So you have to look at Schauffele's performance and that winning margin, even though he was, what, six ahead of Shane Lowry. It was his performance that created that gap, rather than Lowry not trying his best to try and get into this tournament.
Definitely. And while we're on that point, Ray, the performance from Xander Schauffele was amazing, and the first man to win two majors in a calendar year since Brooks Koepka in 2018. Like, that's an incredible achievement, isn't it?
And he's the first player since Rory McIlroy in 2014 to win both the USPGA and the US Open in the same year. First player since Jordan Spieth to win his first two majors in the same season. And would you believe it's the first time since 1982 that Americans have held all four majors at the same time? Back then it was Tom Watson who had won the Open and the US Open. Ray Floyd won the PGA, and the great man himself, the Walrus, Craig Stadler, won the Masters. And he had also continued his winning streak for the Americans. It's the seventh American winner in the last eight Opens at Royal Troon. And in the last 2 years, seven of the eight winners were American as well, of the four majors. John Rahm being the exception, who won the Masters last year.
Wow, yeah. And like, I think there were some interesting comments kind of came from the media perspective at the Open even beforehand, Ray. Obviously, Tiger Woods' comments about, you know, captaining the US in the Ryder Cup. And there was, I suppose, some speculation that the Open may even potentially come to Dublin sometime. So there was a couple of interesting developments on that front as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, of course, we're back in Royal Portrush next year. We were there in 2019. So Portmarnock has been touted. The investigations are ongoing. Martin Slumbers, I won't say he poo-pooed the idea, but he said that they're still waiting on a feasibility study to be done to see whether or not the Open could be played at Portmarnock. You know, if people know Portmarnock, there's one small road to access the peninsula, and a lot of work would have to be done to try and have the Open at Portmarnock. But it's not beyond bounds possibilities. Padraig Harrington was also interesting that his exemption will run out when he hits his 60th birthday in, I think, 2032. And so they're hopeful that maybe that might be the year that the Open would arrive at Portmarnock. You talked about Tiger Woods and the Ryder Cup. He's heavily involved in the discussions between the PGA Tour and PIF for that merger or whatever, and sorting out all that information. So he said he couldn't give it the time this time. But I think you will certainly see Tiger Woods, captain of the US team, when the tournament arrives in Adair Manor 2027.
Definitely, and I think there was a real interesting exchange when they pitched Conor Montgomery's comments to Tiger Woods as well. He had fairly choice replies to that as well.
He did indeed, yeah. It was the perfect put down when he said that he doesn't have to make that decision to retire until his 60th birthday. Colin didn't have that opportunity because he's obviously making reference that Colin never won a major. So it was an interesting retort. And then I think on Twitter, Colin Montgomery came back and said that his comments were taken out of context, which is usually the standard response. But I think it was a perfect put down. And it kind of gave a little bit of interest in the Tuesday and Wednesday and before there was any golf played at all.
Absolutely. And I think, if anything, from what I would kind of summarise over the course of the 4 days as well, people talk about how the US Open is always traditionally so difficult and, you know, you can win with a very low score. But if you're under par in any way in the British Open in recent years, you're in with a shout, really, aren't you?
But the last time it was played, I think it was a two-horse race between Henrik Stenson and Phil Mickelson, and the rest were also rans. But this week, it was a very, very different situation. As I said, you're still only 9 players under par. Would you believe the cumulative score across the tournament was 1,344 over? The hardest hole across the week was the 11th, and that had a score over the week of 2 plus 200 or 200 over. The easiest hole, the 16th, which was a par 5, 80 under. So it was a very, very difficult setup, and it's everything that an Open Championship should be. You should have wind, you should have range for the test of golf, and I think that's what everybody got this week.
Definitely. I think, like, to sum it up, you nearly see that scene of Siwoo Kim getting the hole in one on the 17th, so to move to 5 over, and the jubilation of that, I think it just nearly summed up the tournament as a whole. Just as a final question, Ray, where does the 2024 British Open rank with the other Opens that you've attended?
That's a very good one. I think the biggest issue for us is an Irish winner, and I think it doesn't rank with Portrush. It doesn't rank with Rory winning in 2014 as well. You know, though, when you have an Irish winner, that elevates the tournament in your own head. But I enjoyed the tournament. I think I enjoyed it more because I was in the media centre when the rain was howling and bucketing down. But there was a few of my colleagues who are still drying out their clothes after Saturday. But you know, it was the Open Championship is a very unique and special. Even as a journalist to cover it, it is very unique. It is. You know, you've got the best of the players there. You've got conditions that everybody wants. You know, you don't want to see anybody scoring 20, 21, 22 under. You want a good, hard tournament. I think that's what we got this week. It's probably not the best tournament that we've been at over the last number of years, but, you know, it still provided a little bit of excitement yesterday.
Definitely. Well, I'm sure it was a great 4 days, Ray, and the glamour of Weaver Park so awaits you when you're at home. But really appreciate your time, and thanks very much for all your coverage across the course of the weekend.
You're very welcome.
And that's all for this week. Thanks as always for listening, and the full interviews will be available on the podcast section of our website, wlrfm.com. We'll have live Friday night soccer this week as Waterford FC make the trip to Drogheda United, and Tomás McCarthy will have updates across the course of the weekend from the Waterford Senior Hurling Championship. And of course, we also have the 2024 Paris Olympics to look forward to. I've been Jordan Norris. John O'Shea is up next. Have a great week.